Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Magic Mike Show. I'm obviously not Magic. I'm Mike Somich. We're here for episode 542. We got a special guest today, Mr. Aaron Halterman. Is your voice lost yet?
No, it's not. It's getting there, though. No, it's been nice. I've had a lot of family time here at Plattsburgh with Heather's family, but it's nice to kind of get away and do the shows today and kind of have a normal day, so to speak. I know you and I are a creature of habit, right? And when we travel and stuff, we're always just kind of like, yeah, I'd just rather be home and do my thing, you know? So,
yeah, well, I'm excited to talk with you about a little Keeneland, obviously, but it's also Derby time. You and Jared did blinkers off a little earlier today. I thought you did a phenomenal job of running through the Derby horses. And I don't know if you listened to last week's Magic Mike episode on Thursday. I caught some flack because we're in NFL draft season, right? And what does everyone love to do? We compare people. This player is going to be this player at the next level. Mm-hmm. I love doing that with the Derby. So hear me out here.
I'm listening.
I think the best comparison for Sierra Leone is Tappet Trice. And I got blasted for it. But I think it's pretty accurate. You have two very big horses, similar running styles. They're not all that athletic. If you remember, Tappet Trice didn't pan out the way I think everyone thought. But going into the Derby, he was everybody's Belmont horse. Mm-hmm. He was the favorite in the Derby. There are parallels between Tappet Trice and between Sierra Leone. Now, I will say this. I'm much more scared of Sierra Leone this year than I was Tappet Trice last year, but I do think there's some parallels between the two.
So before I agree, which I kind of agree with you, but before I do, why are you more scared? Is it more to do with the other horses in the race this year?
Yeah, I don't like I have my opinion. Like, I was pretty in on Mage last year. My opinion this year, there's six horses you could tell me won the Derby, I wouldn't be that surprised. And that was not the case last year.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think he might be a little bit more mentally mature than Tappet Trice. I will say that. I think, although, you know, he struggled to go in the gate at the Bluegrass. That's something people forget when they win. They forget all the antics before the race. So, yeah, I mean, as I said that, I thought to myself, I was standing right there when the idiot wouldn't even go in the gate. So, you might be right. Running style, it's really hard to argue your point. I mean, this is the horse you know that is a closer that's going to be last, second to last. Like, you just know it. There's no way around it. And when you are that horse, the chances are you're going to be very wide into the final turn of the Derby. So I don't hate the comparison, to be honest.
It'll be interesting to see where he draws. I know you guys mentioned you don't really care where he draws. I don't love the idea of being on the inside for him. Just because, like, I think he wants to be outside. He wants to be able to roll, and he'll have to do that in the second turn. But just having some type of cover sitting in the three path or two path around the first turn versus sitting dead last, I think would be better for him.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably make an argument for that. I think I still don't think it matters as much with a horse like that because I really believe, and again, it's every single race now, we're just dropping and that's all we're doing. And it doesn't really matter where we break or what we do. You know, he was on the outside in the last race, just dropped over. If he's inside, he's just going to drop over. I will say, you know, if it rains, I would say an outside starts to make a lot more sense for him. Right. Cause anytime it rains and you're up inside there with all that mud, that's a big kind of difference from just the regular dirt.
Now, I didn't watch the end of the show. Did you give an actual, like, current Derby pick at the end of the show?
Did not. No. He actually, Jared asked me before, or like when we started the show about it, and I said, I'm not doing that. I'm not going there. I've totally changed my approach, not just for the Derby, but any race. I don't even think about the race till they draw it anymore, because there's so many times now their horses they're pointed for here, they're pointed for here. They never show up. They get hurt. And also, when you start to think of a race 2 weeks, 3 weeks in advance, and you get locked in on a horse, and then those past performances come out, and it's like, uh-oh, I don't like this horse. But if I don't pick this horse I wanted 3 weeks ago and it wins, I'm going to feel terrible. You get in your own head where I think this Derby, when they draw it, I'll start thinking about it.
Some of the biggest mistakes I've made betting horses is the mistake of making assumptions. When, like, you see a race draw at Saratoga and it's six horse field and you know every one of the six horses, You already have your mind made up before you look at the past performances who you're going to go with. And then the horse doesn't win. You're like, what the hell was I thinking? Why did I end up on this horse? And it's because mentally I had already made the decision before I even looked at the past performances.
Yep. 100%. And I kind of told myself this year, I kind of looked back at what last year and was like, look, you have to take each individual events meaning races as its own thing for that day. And what it doesn't matter what they're aiming for or this or that, or what they could be good at. What are they doing today? What's going to happen today? And don't even think about it. And that, I mean, sometimes like during the year, that's pretty easy to do, honestly, but for this race, it's really hard to do. I've seen family members I haven't seen 4 or 5 months. You know what the first question they're asking me is? Well, who am I supposed to bet for the Derby this year? So I don't know. And they're like,
a little early.
I was like, yeah, but I don't know.
Now let's remember that statement. We're going to cover the late pick five at Keeneland, but Aaron said, remember, you got to look at today and what the horse is going to do today. That will be relevant when we get later into the handicapped races. I'm going to use that one against you, buddy. All right, let's jump into it. Here's Keeneland late pick five from Saturday. All right, right out the jump here, we've got a $120,000 N2X allowance on the turf. And before we get to the handicapping, this is another question I had for you, because I think this is part of what makes Keeneland and Saratoga so difficult. Where does this rank from a class perspective for you? Is this a low-level grade three? Is this a, you know, because you have horses coming in from graded stakes. You've got like one horse coming in from a 25X, one optional winners of one allowance at Gulfstream Park. Where do you rank a 120, 140, whatever the allowance is, X, 2X or 3X at Keeneland and Saratoga?
Yeah, I mean, especially on a weekend, this could be a grade three, right? You know, sometimes you get those Wednesdays and Thursdays. It's like, yeah, that is kind of an allowance field. But yeah, you get on the weekend, you get 120K. I'm with you, man. If you win this race, you can definitely move up to stakes and it's not going to be any problem at all. Yeah, it's a high class level race. Let's put it like that.
It really isn't. A favorite here is going to be the 10-horse Sacred Wish, 5-2 on the morning line, coming out of back-to-back grade threes, ran in two grade ones earlier in the career. But since the last three races switched over to turf for George Weaver, I found this race really difficult because I like the 10, 11, and 12, yet I hate the 10, 11, and 12 posts, specifically on this turf course going this distance. But it was I thought this was a tough one to kick it off. Where'd you end up on top, Aaron?
Yeah, I think this is a tough one to kick it off. You just kind of got to survive it. I went the 11 Pleasant Passage on top, and this is kind of like a horse that I've used a lot and lately has been a little bit, you know, disappointing, but coming back from the layoff and getting Irad Ortiz aboard, I really thought that was interesting. Irad does not ride for McGahee or Shug McGahee a lot. So I thought that was interesting as well. Look, I think this horse has been, you talk about class level at Saratoga. This horse has been in these type of races at Saratoga and ran okay. Like I said, I just think Irad aboard makes a difference for me. So I went with the 11 Pleasant Passage on top.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Shug and Irad only teamed up 18 times in 2023 and 24. Considering that they are at all the same tracks, that was a surprisingly low number to me. You mentioned he picks up the mount. The last time he rode this horse was the grade two Miss Grillo, where this horse won. So Pleasant Passage, obviously a positive there to get Irad back. Also has a couple efforts over the Keeneland turf. I didn't think either was that bad, even though she did lose as a favorite in the Appalachian. I went right to the inside. I put Sacred Wish on top. This is a horse that since switching over the turf has done nothing wrong. Has been in three stakes, won one of them, finished top four in the other two. We had a comment early about this being a surge capacity support group. Well, surge capacity beat this one two back. So a horse that has faced pretty good horses, ran well here at Keeneland, ended up finishing fourth in the Valley View. That was the race where surge capacity won. Heavenly Sunday, who won back next, was in that. Bling was in that. So pretty good field coming out of that race. Also coming off the layoff, that to me the big concern here, not seen since last November in the Pebbles, a grade three, ended up ran second in that one. And the post to me is the other big issue here. Like I have the 11 in second. So I agree with you. I think these are the top two horses in the race. It's going to be interesting to see what type of trip these two horses are able to work out. The mile distance at Keeneland over this turf course does not favor outside horses. It's one of the reasons I spread in this race.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that, and they're tough posts. Now, the thing that I feel decent about there, it's not like a situation where these horses are going to fly out of the gate, try to get over, try to cross over type of thing. They are more of horses that are going to drop back, and so I think, you know, if not all the way back, but at least in the middle of the pack, and that becomes a little bit less stressful for these kind of posts. Again, it's still not great. I'd rather be inside. Let me reiterate that, but it's a little less stressful is how I'll say it for those two horses. So, but I'm with you. I thought 10 and 11 made a ton of sense. I'll let you talk about the 12. I want to talk about the 7 for a second. So I went 7, 10, 11, 12. So the 7, the long shot I used here at 10 to 1, I thought this was a really interesting horse. I came off of a layoff for Ian Wilkes. And, you know, Wilkes is usually kind of a second off the layoff. We see kind of the progression if the horse is going to indeed progress, which, you know. But anyway, first off the layoff, we saw that horse fire. And I thought that's interesting to me. And if we get progression second off the layoff, this horse is right there with a chance. I thought the 7 was very interesting at 10 to 1. I'm with you. The 10, 11, 12 make all the sense in the world. I could just make a strong case for that 7. So I used the 7 in there as well.
It's interesting you're using the 7. Doc obviously brings up the 7, kind of like the 7, but might be a tough race. This was the horse that caused me to ask the question of what level do you put this race at? Because this horse is coming out of a Gulfstream Park turf race, a mile, going 1 mile, $25,000 N1X allowance. Like, this is like a jump up the stakes for this horse. And that, to me, was the big reason I didn't use the 7. And it was one of the reasons I gravitated toward the outside 3, the 10, 11, and 12, because this is not a class test for any of them. It's clearly a big class test for the 7. Now, that being said, you're getting 10 to 1 because it's a class test. So you're getting the price. And I will be interested to see what American Retro's number is when we get closer to post. Because if she floats up and she's 15, 20 to 1, she's someone I definitely want to use in this one. If she floats down and all of a sudden we're sitting at 6 to 1, I have no interest in using the 7 American Retro.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. That's very interesting that you actually brought it up for that horse, and I use that horse. That's kind of perfect for you there, I guess. So that's what I'll say. It was a Saturday at Gulfstream Park in February. Those usually have decent horses in it. I'm not going to argue that race was as tough as this one, though. I'm not going to go there. So that's very interesting. But I do feel like it, for me, this was more of a not what this horse did in the last race, but what I project this horse could do if we see that Ian Wilkes like improvement in the second race. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you that this is a tougher spot without any doubt, but maybe the horse is ready for it.
Yeah, Wilkes 2 for 10 so far at the meet. Alvarado had a phenomenal meet so far. He's 6 for 24, 25% win percentage. Probably should at least mention today that that Joel Rosario, after being absolutely atrocious for the first couple of meets, did have a triple today, had a hat trick of wins. So congratulations to our boy Joel Rosario. Always keeping an eye on him here. Third for me was the 12 horses one you're using as well. Olivia Maralata. Yeah, we're gonna go with Maralata. Coming over from Europe, William Walden's a trainer. Not a huge sample size for William Walden so far at this meet. 1 for 4. He's got a third place finish as well. North America, 16% with 25 starters. Positive ROI. This is a class drop for Olivia here on the outside, coming in from Group 1s and Group 2s overseas. Didn't have a ton of success in those fields. But the other thing that caught my eye here, and I like, to me, this is one of the advantages that Euros have when they come to the U.S., this is going to be the low weight she's carried in her life. Carrying 118 after consistently carrying 128-ish, 126-ish overseas. There was one 123 sprinkled in there. By the way, she won that race. Time forms line her up to be as good as anybody else here. She, when you watch her races overseas, she was early in her career on the lead in turf sprints and later in her career coming from the back routing. So kind of interesting to figure out what she's going to do here from the 12 post. But Walden gets Pratt aboard. That, to me, kind of sealed the deal.
Can't argue. I mean, you look at this one and it's just like, yeah, it's a European form. We're in an allowance. We're getting Pratt. It makes a lot of sense. And this is another one though. I think these 10, 11, 12 are just going to go in a line and try to drop over a little bit. So, you know, the post is going to be tough, but I mean, this horse has that European class that, I mean, much better than anybody else in this race.
Last horse on my ticket, Carl Ramron shouts it out. The 2 intrigues me. Seems like a race Drury sneaks one in for the win. The 2 intrigues me as well, especially considering I think this is by far the best post position for anyone who actually is contending in the race. If you look at, and I'm going to go with Miss Reed A, because I like poker and you misread people's hands, and B, because Freddy's the red is on the inside. I don't want to say misread and Freddy's the red. So we're going with a two misread here. Sias picks up the mount for Drury. It's going to be first off the layoff for this horse. This is one of those spots when you have these races and you've got four-year-olds, five-year-olds, three-year-olds. I kind of like the five-year-olds a little bit more. That's what misread is in this spot. Came out of a stakes race last time. That was the first race without Lasix in a while. I can kind of excuse why that one wasn't necessarily as good as what you wanted. Also broke from the seven post of nine horses that day, was three wide on both turns, so that made that trip a little more difficult. Little concerned the mile's short, that the mile and 16th, mile and eighth may be the better distance for Miss Red here. But look, Drury's 19% off this type of layoff. You get Sias aboard. Sias only rode for Drury one time in the last 2 years. That was a win. So you know that he's getting calls when there's live horses here. And again, the post to me is a huge advantage. Of the competitive horses, like if we look at the 1, 2, 10, 11, 12, Miss Red has by far the best post with the tactical style of what could win this race. You're getting 8-1, you're getting Luis Sias. And I didn't love any of the bombers. Like I didn't like anyone from that 3-9 range, and I was trying to find a bigger price to put in here. So the two ends up on the ticket for me.
Let me ask you this on the two. Sias gets aboard. We haven't seen this horse in a while. We're drawn inside. Do you think they just send? Do you think I know that horse has tackle speed, but you think in this spot they're thinking go to the lead?
I think Sias sits right behind Woohoo Jackie Blue, the three horse, who I think sends. I think that's your early leader, and I think Sias gets a dream trip. Just says, okay, clear me, and I'm going to chase you and not let anyone else in the pocket. And then you tilt out second turn, and you save ground both turns and try and win.
I like it. Well, I don't, because I don't have the course, so I don't like it.
Go ahead. We'll see what's able to happen there. Any other interest? I mean, we got four also eligibles in here. Did any of them consider to make your ticket here if any of them draw in?
None of the also eligibles, no. You did mention the horse on the rail. I had some interest in that horse as well, but it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can really do McPeak in the spot, so I didn't end up doing it.
So I was on the one and then off the one. And there were two different reasons. First off, Freddy's the Red, inside horse, McPeak, Hernandez riding. Three worst races all over good turf. Mm-hmm. If you take out the good turf, all of a sudden it's a different racehorse. The problem is best race, Kentucky Downs, which you often can say, well, that's not really an accurate track for it being able to project out. Now, horses who run there often have success moving forward. But if I look through your entire race career, right? And the high buyer number is 81 outside of Kentucky Downs. You ripped a 92 off at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah.
Kind of makes me not trust the 92.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. Yeah. And that one race at Kentucky Downs was very good. There's no doubt about that. I mean, that was a nice win. You talk about class level. That was a high class level that day.
I mean, that was a $757,000 race. By far I guess the QE Cup. Now I bet the QE 2 Cup is less than 750. Probably the most expensive race runs its best effort. Pretty darn good time to show up for Freddy's the Red. This is a horse I'm really interested at when we get back to Kentucky Downs. But until then, probably not going to play Freddy's the Red. All right, let's move on here to leg number two of the pick five. Wouldn't be Keeneland without a nice little 7-furlong maiden special weight for the ladies here. Interesting field. I would say it's a tough one. You've got a Brad Cox who's debuting the three horse, but it's Concepcion up, not one of his kind of go-to jockeys at Keeneland specifically. She's wicked smart. If for Falcone shows up again for Sias, she's coming out of the Just FYI maiden race where there were, I believe, three horses or four horses that won back at. So interesting little puzzle here, Aaron. Who'd you go with on top?
Yeah, this is really tough. I went four deep once again in this spot, and I went with who you mentioned there, the number four, She's Wicked Smart. Look, I mean, coming out of that tough race, and I think that is kind of the thing. Now, look, we haven't seen this horse in a while. I do think it's a really good sign Luis Sias gets aboard here. Kind of tells me, look, we haven't seen this horse in a while, but, you know, the jock agent sees the maiden race, and the jock agents know which horses are working out well and which aren't. And for Luis Sias to get this mount, it tells me, okay, they think this horse has talent. If they didn't think this horse had talent, that was maybe a fluke third-place effort. I don't think we'd see Sias. So, to me, like logically, this horse is going to run a bigger number than that race. I was just a 2-year-old race. And so if she's ready to take a little bit of a step forward with the top jockey, then I had to go with her on top. So, but I don't have a lot of confidence in this race. I went four deep, but the four, She's Wicked Smart, so I put on top.
Yeah, lukewarm top pick for me as well. Falcone off the layoff, 23% at over 180 days, $2.28 ROI. So that's obviously good. And just FYI, a horse that's hard to beat. Like, and so if you're able to stick close to her, and that's what She's Wicked Smart was able to do in the first effort, I think that tells you something. This is also Falcone's first starter at Keeneland. That tells me this horse is running well. He's not shipping horses from Belmont to Keeneland just on a whim. So the fact that you got a first starter here, Saez and the Good Works, the four ended up on top for me as well. I went 42, second pick on my ticket, not on yours. Give me the one horse illusion here for Rudolph Brissett. Irad Ortiz picks up the mount. We add blinkers. You mentioned Wilkes last time, running horses into shape. Brissett's another one where first start, no interest. Second start, let's go, baby. 36% off 22 efforts on second starters for Rudolph Brissett. The fact that Irad took them out, too, was also pretty eye-popping to me. We're going to add blinkers. That's a 10% move, almost a positive ROI there. But then the last piece of it was that opening race. Horse took some money, broke out of the 11 post at Turfway Park going 6 furlongs. Now you get the one post. I think you're going to show more speed with these blinkers. I like the 6-to-1 price here. And like I said, Brissett second out is a good angle.
Yeah, good pick. It's interesting that you're taking a horse that has one start in synthetic, and my horse that I'm going to put in second is the 7, Halliston Rose, who has a start on turf and a start on synthetic. So I think that does kind of tell us in a way, yeah, we like this 4, but maybe we put the 4 on top because – these have some question marks, all of them, right? And so it's like, okay, if the 4's ready, she wins. If not, we're going to take some shots here. So the Halston Rose, look, I think the horse has a pedigree that says dirt's going to be fine. Both races have been okay down at Gulfstream Park. One race over the turf, I mean, it was fine. Then off the turf, went on the synthetic, okay as well. I don't know. I just feel like this is one that's going to kind of stock the pace, I think has some experience, can get out of the gate and kind of sit there. I really like 8-to-1. And I kind of, for that second horse, I did look towards, hey, try to find somebody that's not a favorite here. You know, I know this isn't an exacta trifecta show, but at the same time, when you handicap this, you do kind of think, okay, I don't want to play just the 4 favorites here. And I thought the 7, I just kept going back and thinking, boy, that trip's going to be good. If this horse takes to the dirt, the trip's going to be good, you know? So I did put the 7 in second.
Yeah, 7's going to be interesting. The 8 is going to decide the 7's race. Yeah. It feels like if the 8 can clear the 7, it's over. It's lights out. If the 7 can stay in front of the 8, then all of a sudden the 7 has a legit shot. Never passed a horse in her career, but hey, you know, she can get the lead. So that's how you get from gate to wire there. If Halston Rose is able to do that. You didn't use the 3, and I did here. It's ironic. We're going 4 deep, and sure, one of the 4s overlap, and that's our top pick. She's Wicked Smart. After that, we're going different directions. I use Soundbite the 3 for Brad Cox. I don't think this race is very good, and so for me, the first-time starter is a new face to look at here. Cox, obviously, having a great meet, 36% right now at Keeneland, 26% with first-time starters. This was an Audible horse, $15,000, what Audible stands for. Sold for $350,000. So obviously a monster price tag here on this horse. And the family's been pretty good as well. 4 of 5 siblings have won. 2 included wins as debut winners for that. So I'm willing to take a little bit of a shot here to see what can happen. The 2 siblings also won grade 3. So the family is good. The problem is Audible. I think he's like 5% first-time starters. So that's the big issue with Audible.
I thought the jockey situation was weird enough to where it's like, okay, I'm not going to do it. And yes, I know he uses this jockey at Turfway, but I just kind of feel like end of the day, if this was a little bit more of a serious horse, we'd have a little bit more of a Keeneland Brad Cox jockey on. And that, so for me, I was just like, well, I'll take a shot against this horse as the lights just went out over here. So I'm in the dark almost, but anyway, I'll take a little bit of shot against the 3 and not use but you know, look, it's Brad Cox's first time starter at Keeneland. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked at all if you get the win with this horse, but I don't know. I just went against a horse. I want to mention the 5, so I put it in third. It's another horse that's a little bit of a price here. This horse ran 2 pretty good races at Oakland and got beat by 2 pretty good horses. Pop Arena beat this horse on debut. This horse has come back to win. And then Lady Moscato, another horse, not too bad, that beat this horse. So I thought the 5, you know, another one, experience on the dirt, third race on the of the career here, finds the right spot, maybe finds one where there's not a lot of world beaters. I thought the 5 was a little interesting as well.
I was between the 5 and the 9 for the last horse on the ticket. And the difference for me was the price and the jockey here. So I don't dislike the 5 you use here. The 9 and the 5 are both going to be closers. And closing at Keeneland, going 6 furlongs, has not been a wonderful thing so far this meet. So these both of them, to me, were kind of use at your own discretion here. But I made room for the 9 on my ticket here. You don't get Pratt and Amos at 15-1 very often in a field that's just not very good. 9 is closing on career maiden status. That's the big problem. 0-6 in her career. She's got a 1 second, 1 third. She's a better sprinter. They need to stop running her a mile and 16th. If you take out the 2 mile and a 16th races, all of a sudden it's not that bad. And, you know, no knock on, you know, Ben Curtis, no knock on Corey Lannery. Massive jockey upgrade here for Oh My Mia as well. And I think there's enough speed in here that you could see a situation where if Oh My Mia is actually forwardly placed a little bit, and last time was only 3 lengths back of a 45 half, like, she could have a shot. 15-1. I'll take a little bit of a swing here with the 9.
Yeah, no, I get it. Kind of the whole thing, you know, thinking, okay, if the 4 loses, it could balloon, you know, and I get using some prices. Now, unfortunately, to that note, I did use the 8 in this spot as the 4th horse on. I mean, you know, maybe in the end of the day, I might eliminate if something else happens with scratches and I adjust, but I'd use the 8. And the biggest thing for me was like, look, it's Keeneland, it's one turn, it's speed, it's Wesley Ward. If we catch a flyer, say the 4 isn't quite ready, doesn't quite break very well, the 8 could be loose. And if it gets loose, I think it could be trouble.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely been scary. And Wesley Ward at Keeneland in general, scary. However, like, I was looking at his numbers today. He's 6-21. That's phenomenal, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, I think 5 of his 6 winners have come in 2-year-old 4.5 furlong races.
Yep.
So he's like actually 1-15 if you break it down outside of those. So it's like, well, are we really sure? And then this horse got bet off the board in both starts at Aqueduct.
Yeah.
And just quit. Like, that's just really all it was. Just stopped. And so I just couldn't get myself a 3-1 to be like, yep, this is going to be it. When he, look, the Ward horses aren't running as well as I thought they would at Keeneland. And it's been all the 2-year-olds so far for him in this meet.
No, it's a good point. I mean, you're right. The 2-year-olds just run off the screen, can't even see the other horses on there, you know, and then you get with these other ones, and it's been weird. It's weird. Like this horse, you mentioned this horse gets bet, got bet like it was really good, like even money, and gets 4th beaten 5, and then 2-1 in the next start and gets beat 12. I don't know. Maybe I'm the sucker. My problem is, it's just like, man, you watch these races sometime and it's just like, yeah, you kind of, if you think the horse projects to be on the front, you kind of just have to play it at Keeneland. It's going one turn. It is so weird. That track is so weird. One turn to two turn, how the race flow changes as far as speed holding and then closers winning. So it's weird.
Even a mile and a 16th to a mile and an 8th, it's crazy.
Oh, totally.
Like, yeah. you almost want horses off the lead at a mile and an 8th, and you don't want anyone not near the lead at a mile and a 16th.
Yep, and the short stretch is probably a little bit of that in the mile and 16th. They have that the mile 16th finish pull is different from the mile and an 8th, so that could be a lot of it. But you're right. I mean, that it just makes a huge difference. And I don't know, these sprints, like I said, they're usually won by speed. That doesn't necessarily mean the 8's going to win, though, because I mean, they're won by speed, but that speed still has to stand up and run, and that was a huge problem for the 8 in the last race.
Yeah, 46 halves and quitting, not great when you're facing a field of 5 at Aqueduct, which is what we saw 2 back ago from there. If you didn't think this race was tough, we're both going 4 deep, we're both using the 4, but I'm using the 1, 3, and 9 with the 4, Aaron using the 5, 7, and 8. So the 2 and 6, the only 2 horses that are not covered by either of us in this spot. Yeah, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about Keeneland here. All right, let's move on. We're going to go to the 8th race on the card, 3rd leg here in the pick 5. We've got the grade 2 Elkhorn, 1.5 miles over the turf course, going 3 turns. And our old buddy, Bold Act, coming back to the U.S., coming back to Keeneland for Charlie Appleby. We're not going to see Buick ship over, or Spencer as it was last time, but you are going to have a European jockey with the Tory on him. Is he going to be able to win another great 1.5 mile race here at Keeneland, Aaron?
Yeah, I think it's class of the field. I really do. I ended up singling the 4 Bold Act in this spot here. And it's not one of those singles where it's like, yep, boom, automatic. Now I'll build around this horse. Like, I go back because it's just recently Discreet Mischief, who ran on the 3rd race in Bluegrass Day, right? So when you had handicapped that sequence, you look, it's like, okay, there it is. That's a single. Now we'll build around. This sequence was more of a okay, let's handicap all the races. Oh, I'm not sure if I want to single here. Yeah, okay, we'll do it. Right. So obviously when you single a horse, you're confident, but it's not like, hey, this is a free square by any means. But look, I think he's the class of the field. You know, the Sycamore, I thought he was very impressive. That was his first race over here. And then came back, went back to Maidan and won last time out at a mile and a half. Looked really impressive. I just think if he brings that race, he's a little too tough. Now, the problem is this is not an easy field. So he will have to run his A race, I believe, to win.
He will also be coming from dead last in the pack. This is one of those Appleby dead closers. Yeah. So expect him to be way back there. And if Boldax loses, how does he lose? Someone takes him gate to wire. Yeah, someone's in front of him. And just is able to beat him. And, you know, you said earlier, I mentioned about having to handicap the races versus just working off assumptions. And you mentioned it's got to be about that day and that race and that specific thing. Pedlo calling it out. Why use 2 and 1 will do? What's the 11 doing in here? The 11's going to the lead in here. That's what Silver Knot's going to do here. I hate Silver Knot. I don't like this horse one bit. Tell me the 11 doesn't make an easy lead in this race.
Yeah, I think the 11 makes the lead. I do. Yeah. he'd probably be out there 3 ahead.
I don't see a world where Silver Knot isn't going. And I don't see a world where Silver Knot isn't ahead at the mile point going 140 to the mile. Like this could be a very, very, there is no one else who wants the lead. No one else who wants to even sniff the lead. I mean, you're looking at like Miss Cut went 137 and 2 to the mile, probably the second fastest horse. Or missed the cut right to the inside, was 4 lengths off that 137 number. I mean, this is going to be Pratt just slowing it down on Silver Knot. And, like, yeah, I agree. Boldak could totally catch Silver Knot. I think it's going to be real hard for anybody else to run him down.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Silver Knot finally wins and he wins the race where they don't have the European jockey aboard him? I mean, that's kind of the dead giveaway that they've always really liked this horse because he's been in the United States a lot. And it's always been, you know, Buick or Spencer, and you always go, okay, well, they love him because they wouldn't send that, you know, Buick or Spencer over here to ride, and he never wins. And now you got, hey, forget about him. We're not sending anybody over to ride that horse. He gets Pratt, who's amazing, and he wins. I mean, it's very possible. At the end of the day, I think he will make you believe he's winning and lose.
Yeah, I don't hate the 411 Exacta Colt. Let's put it that way either. Like, I could 100% see Boldak running down Silver Knot and Silver Knot running second.
Yeah, I at the end of the day, I get it. Like, I've got Silver Knot third in this one. So, I mean, I get it. Not going to be shocked if he wins. But his last couple of races, I thought were better. And I thought, okay, he's getting there. But he still couldn't do it. And he's a horse that, like, a lot of times in mid-stretch in these races, you think he's winning. And then when they hit the wire, it's like he never really had a chance, you know? So, but I get it. Send him from the outside, see how far you can take him.
And you mentioned that. I mean, think about the horses that Appleby has chosen to send over here. And then think about the races that Silver Knot has been in. The Pennine Ridge, which is a setup for the Belmont Derby. The Secretariat. The Twilight Derby on Breeders' Cup Day. The Hollywood Derby. Like, this is a horse that clearly they think is very good or thought was very good when they shipped him over. Yeah. And he just hasn't been able to deliver on that. I wouldn't be shocked if this is the day where he actually gets the wire first. I don't mind the 8-to-1 price is the other Appleby. So tell me who you had second and why it was the 3 Highland Chief.
Oh, it was not the 3 Highland Chief. No, it was. Yeah, it was in second. Okay, I had the 3 Highland Chief. Yes, yeah. I do. Now, the bad news is the layoff, obviously, is a question mark, right? But look, I mean, this horse has races in the past performances. If this horse is ready to rock, we can win here, right? I mean, one of the reasons I did feel comfortable singling the 4 was because this horse hasn't been to the races in 532 days, right? But look, we talked about the Sycamore and we talked about Boldak. Well, 2 races back, which has been a long time ago, this horse won the Sycamore as well. So yeah, no, I think you can use this horse. If you're going to, obviously, because I have him second, if you're not going to single, I think you use him. I don't see why this horse can't compete. If he gets back to these back races, he's running speed figures that are just as good, if not better, than everybody.
Yeah, I again, I said I like the 4-11 cold exacta. I don't hate the idea of a 4-11-3 cold try or 4-over-11-3-11-3 try, because I it feels like those are the two horses that are by far the next two in this race to me. Like I didn't see anything at a monster number I liked.
No. And to go even further, I think the 10 is the other one as well. You know, and that's not a monster number either. So yeah, I'm with you. I'll take your silver knot. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be shocked if anybody, you know, other than 3, 4, 10, 11 won. Hard to make a case for those other ones, because it seems like the class level, even silver knot, who's been a pain in the ass, right? It just seems like his class level is a bit better than those other ones that we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, I will be rooting for King Curlin, who has a special place in my heart after we talked about this horse like ad nauseum when he debuted. Or when was it? It was the debut down? All the way back in 2021, where I had this horse a cold second underneath an exact at 11-1. So I do love you, King Curlin, but it's probably a little too deep for you here. All right, let's move on to the fourth leg in the sequence. I got another graded stakes here from Keeneland. You got to love Keeneland Saturdays. This one is the Ben Ali Grade 3 going a mile and 3/16. This race is a mess too. I singled here and I don't really love my single, but look, Kings Barnes wins this race if Kings Barnes is back to Kings Barnes, right? Like Smile Happy War Campaign, come on. If you are a decent horse here, Kings Barnes, you got to get the job done. I don't see a ton of other speed outside Laughing Boy, who probably goes to the front, and Kings Barnes sits the perfect trip right behind him. I don't think Smile Happy's running him down late. I don't think War Campaign is running him down late. I don't think Dynamic One is running him down late. And I wanted to spread in the first, second, and the last leg, so I had to find a single. For me, it was the 4 Kings Barnes.
Yeah, this is really gross. This is a really, really gross race of hate, is how I would describe it. Okay, Kings Barnes. I used him. So I can't, I didn't put him on top, but I do want to talk about him for a minute. So as you know, like we kind of, and this really, what we've learned over the years, knowing somebody in a barn really doesn't mean shit, but we do know, you know, somebody in the Pletcher barn that can give us at least information of this horse is doing well, this horse isn't, type of thing. Right. So we text about Kings Barn when he came back from the layoff, and they're like, oh yeah, he's a good horse. Like they've got good plans for him. They like him. We think he'll run really well. Go back and watch the replay of that Gulfstream race. He won. He ran the opposite of really well.
Yep.
He was horrific in that race. But you got to think he's better than that, right?
Well, look, that wasn't the goal. We talk about this all the time. Exactly. The first race back for a horse that's clearly going to be a graded stakes competitor going a significantly shorter distance than they actually want to go. You can't look at that race and say, oh, well, that's the fully cranked version of this horse. No, that is the step one we're gonna build for later in the year version of that horse. That was what that 7-furlong race was. That wasn't even close to what we should expect to see from Kings Barnes today or Saturday.
The only thing that scares me is they kind of thought he'd run better than that, right? And he didn't. So that doesn't. But look, like I'm not like mouthing you, because I used the horse and I'm with you. Like he's in a great spot. Right. Like if he showed up in a race with some really nice ones, you're like, no, but this is a good spot. And with that, let me talk about another horse that sucks, but who I'm playing and putting on top that makes me want to throw up. And that's a 3, Smile Happy.
I can't. I'm done. I'm done with Smile Happy. I liked Smile Happy when he won at 7-1. I stayed for the funeral. I attended the wedding and I stayed for the funeral, and I regret every minute of it.
I know. And I was not there for the wedding or the funeral, and I haven't been there very often for this horse. This is my thought process. This race sucks. He just got gelded.
Yeah, that is the news in the chat, by the way. We've had more Smile Happy gelded comments than anything else so far this show.
And Gary, that certainly wouldn't make me smile happy. I know that. No. But maybe for this horse, I just, and you're going to laugh, but when he was 7-1, that Ali Sheba, where he won, that was Oaks Day last year. That race
got bet off the board.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Okay. I thought we agreed never to speak of that name again. Look, Why did you do it? And it's close to Derby Day too. Why did you do it? Okay, but seriously,
you brought the race up,
but I didn't bring the horse up. So no, that's on you.
I was at that wedding. I can bring the race up. I can bring the horses up.
All right. Well, I was at a long 2-day funeral that weekend.
that was a great weekend. Let's talk more about last year's Derby.
I mean, that was a 2-day funeral of almost my whole career. But anyway, we survived it. So we're back to the Ali Sheba. Almost quit. Look, if Smile Happy can win the Ali Sheba in that kind of fashion, and we're third off the layoff, if the gelding part of it maybe makes him get back to somewhat of that type of race, and specifically that style where he got out of the gate and had his mind on business, he will really be tough against this group. He found the right group. If the gelding part of it makes him get back to somewhat of that old form, I think he can win. That's why I used him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm so out on Smile Happy, I don't have him in my top four. Like, that's how far out I am on this horse after those last two races at Fairgrounds. It's just like, I don't know what happened. I don't know, like, but the talent, the mental space just moved out. Now, maybe the gelding makes a difference today, but at 3-1, I am not willing to find out with my money. I'll try and go elsewhere. Like I said, I singled Kings Barnes. I thought War Campaign made a little sense. I thought Time for Trouble on the inside made a little sense. I know that, what was it? Shirley Furious got mentioned as well. I should see how deep you are here. So you're 3 deep.
I went
so
9.
You can talk about War Campaign then.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Makes sense. Second off the layoff here. Last time out in the Essex, ran second, beaten 5, unfortunately. But, you know, First Mission ran great. And honestly, First Mission would have been a lead pipe, stone cold single, move on. Yeah. Don't even look at any other horse if he's in the race. So,
Aaron, we don't do that. We always look at the hand. We always handicap the race. We talked about this at the top of the show.
Sure, yeah. So they used the 9 War Campaign because, you know, that wasn't that bad. You know, 2 races back, was able to get a win at Oaklawn there as well. So, look, I don't love this horse, never really have, but he makes sense in a race like this. So, yeah, I went 3 deep, used 3-4-9, didn't get fancy. I do feel like one of those probably should win, but look, this race sucks.
It's not wonderful. No. I almost wanted to go 3 deep because I wanted to use the 9 and the 1. And the 1, second off a layoff. This is a horse that Jeff Hills owns. He put this one back in here. He's owned it for a while. I thought the first off the bench actually not that bad. And now we're getting second off the layoff. The horse is 7. So you got to think they kind of needed that first race. You go to the 2 previous races, both of them in the slop, was able to win both of those. And you go back and like, it's just one of those forms that's really messed up. You got 1 1/8 fast dirt, 1 3/16 muddy, 1 16th sloppy, 1 on the turf, 1 3/4 at Saratoga. This horse just hasn't been able to do anything consistently because they keep moving him around. I wouldn't be shocked if Time for Trouble takes a step forward here. I'm just not sure if it's big enough to win.
Yeah, getting Flavian Pratt aboard is probably the best sign out of all of it, because you do have Hiles, who, you know, in the last year, Flavian Pratt's rode 0 for Hiles, and you know why, because he's, you know, usually not have a horse of that caliber. I don't really know what they're trying to do. I'm with you. It's definitely a weird situation with this horse, but I don't know. I think the distance does kind of make you say maybe try it.
Yeah.
Right.
One for two at Keeneland, that 1 win, 1 1/8 over the dirt.
Yeah.
So it's at least a little bit interesting. In the chat, Shirley Furious, Nick Seavers brings this one up. The 2-horse, 10-1, gets the Tory up here. Any interest there, Aaron?
Nope.
I had in 4th. That was the horse that I put in over Smile Happy, because screw you, Smile Happy. I'm done with you. A look at the Ben Ali this year. So it's an interesting penultimate leg of the pick 5 there. We'll go and close it out here with a $110,000 N1X allowance going 5.5 furlongs over the turf. This was the distance today that caused just absolute havoc at Keeneland, with a 51-1 and 25-1 winners in the third to last and the final leg. Aaron, you taking a shot with the price? Who you got on top here?
I went with the 2 Proud Mary on top. I did not take a shot with a price. I went 3 deep, 2 on top, Proud Mary. Look, good connections. I think right off the bat you could say that. And look, I mean, the horse has been decent at this distance, and been at this track and ran okay. We were talking about earlier that race 6, first race, how, man, it's just a really, really tough allowance. I don't see this one as being all that tough. I know it's got $110,000 purse, but I didn't really care for a lot of the horses in this race. I think the two makes the most sense. I think could get a nice stocking trip off the inside there. The toy's been riding really well, so that's another good positive for this two as well. So I put two Proud Mary on top.
Excellent. Yeah, I have the two in second. I put the one Golden Dagger on top on the inside, 7-2 for Maury and Corrales. I agree with everything you said on the two. I think the horse makes a ton of sense. I just don't know the trip. Like, is this horse just going to go to the front? Is that the goal? Are we going to try and like sit mid pack in stock? Like, I'm not sure what Proud Mary does, and I'm not sure really what the best route for Proud Mary to do to get the win is. Mm-hmm. The race at Keeneland I thought was by far the best, but just was never really a threat to win that race, which also was a little bit of a concern. The one Golden Dagger won both starts. I thought that win at Saratoga was a very good win. I think they clearly underestimated this horse's ability. That's why you saw it start out in $50,000 maiden claimer. They jump up to a $50,000 allowance. Horse is able to close and get the win. Western Lane ended up running third in that race. That was the next out winner. I think the trip works out well for Golden Dagger, where you can save all the ground. You just have to get off the rail and be able to go. Price isn't bad at 7-2. So I put the one over the two, but they were my first two. Did you use the one?
I didn't use the one, and you make good points, but no, I did not use the one. You're right. This horse has fooled him. Hasn't he? Yeah. Yep. Or she, I should say. Maiden Clayton at Turfway on debut. We've talked about it a lot, Mike. When a connection's debut in a maiden claiming race, they're just like, yeah, this horse isn't that good. Usually everybody tries a special weight if they think it's a good horse. But like I said, she won. You jump up to that starter allowance at Saratoga. And again, I mean, that's a good spot. I would have put her there, you know, because you have the condition. But it also kind of tells you, yeah, we don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens. Won again. So this is a huge step up, though.
Correct.
That's the worry.
I kind of like that they take the break and then ship it in this spot.
Yeah.
Because either their opinion changed because of what happened on the track, or something changed over the last 6 months where they decided, hey, this is a real racehorse. But either way, the fact that we don't come back in a claiming condition, the fact we don't come back for any type of tag, and the fact that we choose Keeneland after choosing Saratoga tells me this horse may be ready to roll. And I don't think there's that much in this race. I mean, we got people in chat mentioning the 12. We got people in the chat mentioning the 11. Like, I have a 20-1 shot in the 9 that I'm a little interested in. Like, I think there are different directions you can go here if you're looking outside of the top two to try and find a price. All right, so you didn't have the one. Who did you have in second?
I put the 5 in second, coming off a maiden special weight win, going 5 furlongs on the turf at Gulfstream Park. Irad Ortiz gets aboard here. It's interesting. Paco was aboard last time, but Irad rode 2 races back, which was the first start off the layoff. We saw significant improvement in the second start off the layoff. And now Irad gets back aboard. I thought that was a good sign. Tells you the horse is doing well, at least. So I thought the 5 was interesting. I think we got to take another step up today. I think this horse could. She was pretty solid. Kind of like a we're never losing this race type of horse in that last race there at Gulfstream. So I think we're going to send a little bit harder today than we did when Irad was on the last time. And that could make a difference as well. So I used the 5. And then I went 3 deep, 2, 5, 7. I also used the 7 there, moving back to the turf today. And another one, getting Sias back aboard. I thought I thought that was interesting. So 2, 5, 7 for me.
I hope Walden has a big day for you there. I used the 5-2. The race 2 back was against the boys. I think that's important to note as well. She also had issues going into the stretch in that race where she never really got to run. So there's plenty of trip trouble in that race 2 back against the fellas. And now she gets back to the gals after she won't beat them to break her maiden as well, which I think is a valuable point. So she gets to run against her kind again here. Ortiz for Breen, I think, is a positive as well. So I use the 1, 2, 5, and then I use the 9. Agent here for Lobo. It feels like every Keeneland meet you have one of these Lobo horses that pops up and does something you don't expect. I went back and I watched the debut on April 23rd at Keeneland last year. Broke the two hole in a 12 horse field there. Really had no chance in that race, but I thought it was nice that the horse at least passed some other horses after a slow start. You go back, you look who won that race. Secret Money ended up being a pretty good horse. LJ Zemma was a favorite today at Keeneland. And then they took the horse long, and that went okay. So they went long again. That one got taken off. They went long again. That one didn't go well. So they shortened it back up, but that was a Kentucky Downs. They come back And this horse wins a maiden special weight at Keeneland first off the bench. Now we're going back to turf sprinting, which is what I actually think this horse wants to do the most. I'll take a little swing at 20-1 with the 9-horse agent, who I think is getting back to what she really wants to do and getting the opportunity to face horses I think she can compete with.
You know, that was not an easy race that day either at Turfway that this horse won. I went back. You said you watched the debut. I went back to watch that race, the Turfway race, and this filly kind of motored home. I mean, she got past them now, and she had to pass a bunch of them. So there's worse 20-1 shots. I'll say that. You're right on the Lobo situation. It does feel like, oh, well, there's the 30-1 for the meet that won, you know, and this, it does have the look. You got to love the improvement last time out, off that layoff. That was nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a little bit of a shot. We'll close out the ticket with the 9. We're already at 50 minutes. Magic and I do not usually take this long to get through a sequence. So I appreciate you diving into everything. Is there anyone in this last race we didn't mention that you considered?
Well, I have a lot more points to make than Magic, see? So that's why it took a while.
That's fair.
Yeah, no, your one was the one that I just kind of took off for budget purposes. So if anybody, the one, there's really nobody else in this one that really sparked my interest.
If the 13 makeup gets in, or is it an auto use?
13, yeah. I mean, it's Steve Asmussen, baby. Come on.
You know, he is elite at turf sprinting. That's what you think when you think Steve Asmussen. It probably turns into the speed of the speed. The post is brutal, though.
The way the horse looked at Keeneland, you know, the last time, that's been a while back, but that was a pretty dominant effort. So,
at least consider makeup if she is able to draw into the body of the field. Although that is a 3-year-old. Doc and I had a conversation about this at NHC. Right now, it's like early first 3 months, 4 months of the year, it's such disadvantageous for these 3-year-olds to be with 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
Because they're just coming off their 2-year-old season, and you have these 4-year-olds who are starting to come into their best form of their career versus horses that are still on the upswing. That this is the biggest delta to me when you have these 3-year-old and up races. Like the first 6 months of the year, it's hard for me to be like, I love this 3-year-old when you're facing 4, 5, and 6-year-olds.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, it makes a huge, huge difference. Like I said, now when you get into August, that's September, that's when things kind of change a little bit.
Yep, it definitely evens the playing field there. All right, that's going to be the late pick 5 here for Keeneland. Throw up a little banners here. And then, Aaron, since you're the guest here, you can read your ticket off first.
All right. Well, let me pull it up here. I'm going to go with 7, 10, 11, 12 with 4, 5, 7, 8 with 4 with 3, 4, 9 with 2, 5, 7. $72 ticket for this one. And that single is Bold Act in the Elkhorn.
I'm going to play a little bit cheaper of a ticket, go for $64. I'm going to go 2, 10, 11, 12 with 1, 3, 4, 9. With 4-11, with 4, with 1-2-5-9. If you want to get a little creative, you can single the 4-4-4 through the middle three legs. That's the one, the horses that Aaron and I agree on, and then go crazy in the first and the last. Maybe we should play the 4-4-4 pick 3 there in the middle legs, Aaron.
Ooh, we're doing it. I just wrote it down.
No, you didn't. I didn't see a single movement with those hands. All right, before we go, since we rarely get to talk, and we are about to embark in the best sports playoffs of any sport by far, the NHL playoffs, I have like 3 bets I want to run by you.
Okay. Now, before we do, we have to play a video. Did you know about the video?
No, I didn't know about the video.
Hey, Magic has a video we have to play. So I don't know when you want to do it. We can wait, but I just want to make sure you knew that. But,
okay. Is it hidden somewhere in the brand thing?
Do you want me to do it real quick?
Yeah, go for it. Go ahead and play it.
Okay. So here is a video. It's an announcement video from Magic. So we'll do that. And then we'll talk about something important.
So he's going to announce this when he's not on the show.
It's very odd. I don't know.
It's a choice.
I don't know why he's doing it. I think it's weird too. Should we make him announce it when he's live? I have to play it.
I feel like we almost should make him announce it when he's live. Well, but I guess I don't know if we can because of the timing of it. So we will play it and then we will talk about that. Then we'll talk about the NHL playoffs. But
this okay, break fair. And when this plays, I will run and turn on the light that went off. Try to turn it on. So
there you go. It's over a minute. You got time. You can move.
Okay. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Hey everybody, it's Magic. Just wanted to quickly interrupt the show. Got a very big announcement I want to give to every one of you from my personal life here. Not leaving the Racing Dudes team. Magic Mike Show is not ending. However, I did accept a new position with FanDuel to be an on-air in-studio host at the studio down in Los Angeles, just about a half hour or so drive away from where I live. So Things are going to be a little tumultuous schedule-wise for the Magic Mike Show. Things are going to be a little different. You might not see me quite as often on screen anymore. However, just wanted to let everybody know I'm still here, still going to be with the Racing Dudes team. And, of course, you can catch me. I don't know what days yet. We'll find out as we go. But you can catch me over on FanDuel Racing, co-hosting with some of the best minds and on-air talent in the horse racing industry. So wanted to thank everybody for their support. Wouldn't have gotten here without each and every one of you who's watching live or listening to the replay on podcast. We're over 540 episodes in for the Magic Mike Show. This has been the best training ground possible. So thanks to each and every one of you. Good luck with all of your bets this weekend. Back to Mike and Aaron.
Pretty crazy. Feel like a proud papa right now, don't you?
I do. Of course, he told me, I don't know, it was about a week ago or whatever, and I just kept saying, I'm just so proud of you. And I was like, this is so weird that I'm saying, like, I'm not your parent, but, like, just super proud. And maybe a little backstory of why I feel that way just real quick. Guys, when we met Magic, he literally was just like, please, I like racing. I don't know anything about it. Can I just hang around? I'll do a little bit of editing for you guys and just kind of soak up some knowledge. And now we're at this point, right, where it's like he's going to work for freaking, you know, TVG, FanDuel, whatever you want to call it now. And it's just like, man, I feel like I watched this person grow and take those steps. So yeah, it's amazing. Just totally congratulations to Magic. I mean, awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to say congratulations to Magic. I'm going to say congratulations to TVG because they hired an absolutely phenomenal person to be on air and in studio. And as someone who obviously we both consume that channel, they've got one of their top analysts now from Magic as someone who's going to be on there. So I can't wait to be able to watch him on TVG. And it's pretty crazy where this podcast has gone in 542 episodes. So where it began and where it is now. And I'm so proud of Magic and everything that he's been able to accomplish. He's going to absolutely kill it.
It's unbelievable. I totally agree with that. You know, he told me, he said, you know, I didn't tell you until I got the job because I just didn't think there was any need. I didn't think I'd ever get it. And I told him, and I know you did too. I said, you know, what's interesting?
I'd be shocked if you didn't.
It's like, if you hadn't have got that job, that would have been such a terrible mistake on their part. It's like, you are more ready for that job than anybody that could have applied for it. So it was a no brainer that he would get it. So yeah, I mean, and it's like I said, it's amazing. And look at you. I mean, look at you over here. You're doing the VEASAN thing now as well. And it's like, boy, the kids have all grown up. But I called you, you know, we were talking, I said, Magic, we definitely, you know, we kind of groomed Magic. You were already groomed. You came to us pre-groomed. So I didn't have to teach you the ropes there, Samich. But still happy for you for what you've been able to do with you yourself as well. It's amazing.
It's been a crazy ride. And as Magic mentioned in that video, we're going to keep doing the Magic Mike Show, even though we work for direct competitors now. We'll see how that works out, how long that goes for. We won't be sponsoring either of them on this show. I can promise you that, or any other betting app on this show. I can tell you that much because that's a cause a little trouble. However, not like we're on time anyway. Our timing may move a little bit more just because there'll be Mondays he's on air. There's Mondays I'm going to be in Vegas. There'll be Thursdays he's on air. There'll be Thursdays I'm lazy. So we'll have to figure out exactly how that works, but we'll consistently have at least one show, hopefully still with the two shows a week. And you may see Aaron a little bit more often. I doubt you'll see Jared, but you may see Aaron a little more often jumping in as well as guests from time to time. But I couldn't be more excited for Magic and everything that's going on with him.
Yeah, this is a very important show, and I will be here to sub in for whoever needs it, whether it's, you know, you or Magic. Yeah, for sure. And exciting. Very, very exciting. I can't wait. And like Kevin B said it, now we have to turn I told Magic this. I said, now I have to turn that channel on, and that pisses me off. But we'll say we have to turn the mute button off now when Magic's on. So, yeah.
It's his first week is next week. So I guess that's the reason why I think it was good reason to play it now. So you will start seeing him on air as soon as I don't know what day, but I know as soon as next week you could be seeing him on air in studio. So make sure you check that out as well. I'm sure he'll tweet out when he's going to be there. Make sure you support our boy Magic. All right. Now we can talk about the NHL, right?
Okay, I'm ready.
I think we gushed about Magic for long enough there.
Yep.
I love this bet, like disgustingly love it so much. Central Division to win the Stanley Cup at 3-1. Two reasons. First off, I think the winner of, so the Jets, the Stars, and the Avs, I think are the three best teams in the West.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get one of those three in the half of the Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
The Predators drew the 7.
Yeah.
So they get Vancouver, and I've already bet the Predators to win the Stanley Cup at 48-1 and bet them in the first round at plus 145 against Vancouver. Can't the Predators come out of the Pacific Division and end up having two Central teams in the West Finals?
It's a great bet. I think the Predators are going to come out of it.
I do.
I think the Predators are winning the first round for sure.
And so, like, you have essentially, and if you have one of the two divisions in the Stanley Cup Finals, you're getting 3-1. You can either roll with it depending on who they face. You can hedge out in a bunch of different ways. If you want to get plus money on hedges, you can do that. You could take the other team plus a game and a half, and all of a sudden you have like middles available to you too. But like, if I'm telling you, you guaranteed to have one of the two teams in the Stanley Cup Finals at plus 300, you can make money off that bet.
Well, let's even go as far as saying we're wrong and the Predators don't do what we think they're going to do. I didn't know you were as high on as I was. I'm very high on them.
I have multiple finals, multiple tickets for them to win it all at between 40 and 50 to 1.
I compared it to Florida last year's Florida, I think is Nashville this year, but even if we're wrong, Dallas is excellent. They're excellent. And this Winnipeg is playing great. I was way down on them, and they have played great in the season. That's good to see. And their opponent, Colorado, they're obviously just a very, very good team. So, honestly, all four of those teams are elite type of teams. So, I love that bet. That's a good bet. Yeah.
Plus 300, longest division in the NHL. How?
How? Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense at all. No, listen,
second choice to the Met, fine. Like there are some good teams of these, but like they should not be the longest of the four.
The Pacific Division is not great.
That's my thing too. I have no faith in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. They were good early. They haven't been great late.
Yeah.
Edmonton still doesn't have defense. They still have the same problems that they've had.
Nope.
And like Vegas could make the same run. And I love the Hanifin move. I love the Hurdle move. I like the Mantha move. I like what they did at the deadline. They still haven't shown me it this year, though.
I think Vegas will win the first round. They may even win that second round. I'm with you. They're not the same team they were last year. They're just not. And I know it's a playoffs. If it's different, I don't think they can turn it on enough to beat that team that's coming out of the other side of it.
Yeah. I also hammered Florida minus 170 and Florida minus a game and a half taking on Tampa. I think Florida is just a better version of Tampa. I think that's the biggest mismatch in the first round of the teams that are not minus 200. So I played quite a bit there. Is there anyone else that you liked in any other playoff matchups you liked?
People are going to think this is crazy. I think the Islanders can win their first round matchup. I really believe that they can upset.
You are going to get some of that.
I will not play the Islanders to win the series. I will play them within the series a couple of times because they're going to be like plus 200. They really are. I think they can at least make that a 6-game, 7-game series. So I think you can make some money playing them individually. I think they make a little bit of sense. Let me hold on. I got my bets on another sheet. I didn't know we were doing. I should have known we were doing hockey. So
did you know that there's over under set for the series number of games?
No.
And that series is at 5.5.
I would go over
with the over plus 125.
No. Okay. Well, I will bet that along with the game by games. all right. So I got it up now. Look, I think, like I said, the Islanders, I don't think Tampa will challenge Florida. I don't think the Capitals will challenge the Rangers over on the east side of things. I'm hoping we get some decent prices on the Bruins. I don't know that we're going to, but I hope we do. I think they're better than Toronto, honestly. I think you get underdogs a lot in the second round on the east side. On the west side, I will bet the Avalanche, if they're the right price against Winnipeg, I do think they'll beat them. I'm going Nashville all the way in their series. And I will probably try to take the Golden Knights as much as possible against Edmonton, depending, again, on price. I feel like the Knights will give them all they want.
And that is the one series that the Stars, Knights, Kings, and Oilers, that's not locked in yet. So I guess the Kings can jump the Knights tonight. So we'll see if that happens. I don't think it will. I think both teams win most likely. And you're going to see that the Knights-Oilers matchup where I agree with that. I like the Knights in that one. I like over in that series quite a bit as well. That feels like an over series to me. Mm-hmm. The Rangers Toronto series actually feels like an under series to me, and that's going to be against the flow because a lot of people are going to want to take that Toronto team over. Avs are minus 135, Jets plus 115. I think the Avs win. I can't bet the Avs at minus 135. It would be Jets or pass for me.
I got to play game by game in that situation then. Yeah, because that's one of those series that will probably end up pissing me off, because I'll probably try to take a little bit of Winnipeg if they're that kind of price. It's talking game by game. But I do think the Avs are the best team out of the two. I don't know. That may just be a total. Sometimes, you know, we got plenty of opportunities. That may be a stay away for me, that series. Just kind of watch and see what happens. But I'm with you. I'm really excited to play Nashville. I really like that Nashville-Vancouver. And I don't know what the odds will be, but I think you're going to get like plus 150, plus 160 on Nashville these first couple of games. I'm all about it. All about it. I can't wait to bet.
I bet them plus 135. They're plus 130 right now. They're still 18-1 to win the West, the longest shot in the West. They are still 40-1 to win the Cup, the third longest priced team, the Islanders and Capitals below them. That's incorrect. They do not have the 14th best out of these 16 teams. Mm-hmm. And the path actually isn't that difficult. They drew the best possible path for them because they don't have to play Dallas and then the winner of Vancouver or Winnipeg, Colorado, which would have been absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting – look, who would you rather play, Vancouver, Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado? Vancouver's the answer, right? Yeah.
Who would you rather play in the second round? Would you rather take the winner of the Golden Knights Oilers or the winner of the Avs Jets?
Of course, yeah. That's easy answer, yeah.
It's crazy how well it drew, and yet we haven't seen the odds move. All right, Stanley Cup Finals pick or winner pick. So the Canes right now, the favorite plus 650, the Panthers 700, Avs 700, Edmonton 750 for some reason. I can't remember a year where it was actually this large of a favorite to win the Cup. Usually you see like plus 300, plus 350 at this point. Plus 650, your favorite, the Canes, seems actually like a decent price. So I think you're getting a pretty good price on pretty much everyone. Who you got here, Aaron?
Oh, man, this is tough. I really think it's Florida's year, but I don't like that price. I'd go Colorado. I think with the price, I'd go Colorado.
Yeah, I'm obviously going to be rooting for the Preds. 40-1, I still think, is the best bet on the board. I think the Bruins at 11-1 is not a bad price.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that. Because if you think – listen, you talk about short favorites to win the Cup. Think about the Bruins last year, who got out in the first round, by the way. They probably shouldn't be 11-1, just like they shouldn't have been. I think they were like plus 400 or something maybe last year. So.
Yeah, and I think I respect the Canes. I think the Eastern Conference playoffs can be a barn burner, man. Like the Canes, the Rangers, the Bruins, they're all very good hockey teams. Florida, it's like it's going to be a blast to see, especially if it's those four moving on to the second round. And I love the NHL playoffs just because you're going to get very good series every single round, every step of the way. So can't wait for them to drop the puck.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing you got to realize is you cannot be afraid to take more than any other sport in the playoffs, plus money prices in hockey. Mm-hmm. The thing you have to realize, the eight seed, it used to be the eight seed and the one seed, there's not a lot of difference in those teams. You know, there could be a matchup here or there where it's like, yeah, maybe stay away from that underdog. But a lot of times, like this first series with Nashville and Vancouver, guys, there's no difference between those two teams. Nashville is just as good as Vancouver. Like if you go to an 8-1 in like the NBA, it's like the Pelicans and the Thunder. There's a huge difference in those two teams. In hockey, that margin for error is razor sharp.
What? How often do you see puck luck make the difference too?
Every game.
One team hits two posts, the other clangs in. Like that's the difference. Those two goals are going to be the difference. So love me some playoff first period unders. I know you've jumped on board with that over on VSiN when you're talking about those first period unders. That to me, that's just exponentially more first period in the playoffs. So I'll be looking forward to trying to find some good prices there. And unders in general. Also, if you can get a plus a goal and a half at plus money, it almost becomes an insta bet for me.
Yeah,
because you get so many close games in these playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, and a lot of overtime games, that'll happen as well. So yeah, no, it's just that it's one of those deals where the games get tighter. You think that NHL games are usually pretty tightly played. They get that much tighter in the playoffs. Aside, Edmonton is a team maybe that you're not going to get that style, but most of the time, man, those styles are very tight checking, especially in that first period.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Canes are going to be one of those teams where, if they're in Raleigh, under first period, under first period, under first period. Like it just feels like that's going to be the way it's played. The Golden Knights actually were an over team last year, which surprised me. But they just scored so quickly into games. I don't think I'd ever seen anything like that, where they scored like 5 minutes into every single game in the playoffs and just were able to dictate the pace after that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And they had a magical run too, you know, totally magical run. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. I'm on the fence on how hard I want to play them to start, but they do feel like a team that, hey, maybe they dicked around for a lot of the regular season, but you look roster to roster, they're about as good as anybody.
Yep. I got to say thank you to everybody watching and listening still. We've actually had viewership go up since we started talking hockey, which is just amazing to me. So thank you, everybody, for sticking around. We know you love the horses. We appreciate you watching the Magic Mike Show here talking about Keen Late Pick 5. If you're checking out this pod or this podcast on audio version, thank you for sticking around listening to the end as well. Aaron, thank you for filling in for me, and I appreciate you. You know, we went a little off topic here. We talked a little about Kentucky Derby horse comparisons early, talk about the Keeneland comparisons late, had 20 minutes on the NHL, so I appreciate you being able to jump from topic to topic with me.
It's almost like we do well together on the air. Like maybe we think a lot alike when it comes to sports and horses and how to bet them and why we bet them.
Well, I'm sure we'll do this again now that Magic officially leaving the roost here on us a little bit. But again, we'll keep going with the Magic Mike Show. You'll see us here once, twice a week. Hopefully be around the same time, same place. Well, we'll be the same place. The time may change, but we'll keep you posted there over on Twitter as well. Make sure you're following the Racing Dudes. That's Aaron over there at @racing_dudes. I'm at Samobomb18. Magic's at, is it Curtis Kellewar? At Curtis Kellewar, I think.
I wonder if he'll have to change his handle.
Kurt, is he going to be Magic TVG?
He might.
Like I got to even.
Oh.
Yeah, he's at Curtis Kellewar. I was correct. That's good. Okay. Since I've done this show 541 times before this, I should know his Twitter handle. But we'll see if he turns out to be at Magic TVG. If so, follow that too. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us, and good luck with all of your bets.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.